Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:07 p.m. the Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 8th. I thought we'd kick off with Japan. The Nikkei was up about 2% today and continues to extend this impressive breakout from what was effectively in nearly a three-year range. And we need to get a lot of back history in order to truly appreciate just how long it has been ranging for. Because when we talk about secular bear markets, then there's probably none that was longer than Japan. It's had this incredibly long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. Now, of course, when we talk about rising dividend yields in a market like Japan, where they've had zero interest rates for an incredibly lengthy period of time, then anything that's above 1% is competitive. Anything above 2% is very competitive. In today's environment, where everywhere has got low interest rates, then the yields that we can see on some Japanese shares aren't truly being reflected in the 1.39% on the Nikkei. But the thing that I think is particularly interesting is when we think about the TOPIX index, which is obviously the much larger, more diverse index, then it's breaking out of a very, very long-term range as well. So it's been lagging the Nikkei by about 3 years, but it is now pushing on to new, almost 30-year highs. And that's what I find interesting, is that it's doing so around the same time that its price-to-sales ratio is also breaking on the upside. So what it is clearly demonstrating is that when people are looking at Japan, what they are in fact buying is lower-priced earnings relative to other markets. Now, when people start to do that, and when valuations do start to appreciate, well, then it has to suggest that the secular bear market is over. And the outperformance of the Nikkei is also a clear indication that that is the case. When we then think about the second section index, well, that has been outperforming in no uncertain terms for a long time. And it's been sitting it out for most of the last 2.5 years. Now, the index has rebounded. It is back above the trend mean. It's back above the psychological 7,000 level. But it's also worth highlighting that the peaks generally since 1990 have been below 5,000, and subsequently 5,000 is now support. So past resistance becoming future support is supportive of the view that we are now in a new secular bull market environment for Japan. The other thing about the TOPIX second section is that when it starts to trend, the trends can be both particularly impressive and persistent. So as we then think about some of the vehicles that have been particularly successful in tracking that index, well, the Atlantis Japan Growth Fund has been performing very much in line with the second section for a long time. Now, it is unwinding some of the overbought condition right now, and the discount to NAV hasn't really ever been especially wide, but it's really now only at about 6%. So there's the potential that we could see some further reversion back towards the mean, but if the Japanese small caps continue to outperform, then it's unlikely to pull back very much. One thing that I thought was interesting as well about Japan today is that SoftBank was the one that was making the headlines. It was up in a robust manner, and it is a significant weighting in the Nikkei. SoftBank made some really bad investments with its Vision Fund, particularly in WeWork, and what they are now doing is looking to list an increasingly large number of their holdings. And Didi is likely to be one of those that is coming up for an IPO in the relatively near future. That's the Chinese version of Uber. But what got virtually no commentary is that it was Kobe Steel was the best performer on the Japanese markets in here today. And that's coming off of incredibly depressed levels. And I think this is something that we need to also start to pay attention to. If we're looking at the fact that the Asian region generally has got lower valuations, has not borrowed from the future. That's to borrow a term that I've heard an increasing number of macro investors using. But the reality is that with the extraordinary amount of debt that we've taken on all over the world in order to combat the pandemic, but also the debt that was taken on ahead of that in the USA, where they had already been running pro-cyclical policies, well, that is essentially borrowing from the future because that debt needs to be paid back. But as we look at Asia, they didn't borrow as much. Obviously, they have had big deficits. Everyone's had a big deficit in 2020. And growth did take a hit. Then Asia generally has done better at combating the virus, whether that is because of improving demographics or better public health systems or more experience with dealing with these types of events. The reality is that Asia was better prepared for the pandemic, went in on a relatively equal basis, came out stronger. So it's in Asia that we're likely to see growth, and it's also where we've seen better governance. And it is improving standards of governance, which are generally conducive to stock market appreciation. Now, when steel companies start to do well, particularly after a very profound and lengthy bear market, well, it's generally suggestive of infrastructure development. So there is likely to be infrastructure development in Asia, not least as the demand for a green transition continues, but also to spur additional economic activity. The Chinese market was also in positive territory in here today. Well, China did have a pretty substantial stimulative effort, but not nearly to the same extent in terms of debt to GDP as the USA has had. And it's coming out of the pandemic in a stronger form. The stock market was up about 1% today. This has been an orderly consolidation for the CSI 300. As we then think about the H-share index in Hong Kong, well, it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but I think it would be a little premature to argue that we're back in a trending environment overall. But then when we look at the performance, for example, of Meituan, it's continued to trend higher. It's been one of the big beneficiaries of less government enthusiasm for companies like Alibaba. But Alibaba, having had the big pullback, has continued to steady now above the trend mean, and it may be in the process of ironing out its difficulties with regulators in China. The one thing, of course, that international investors will be paying attention to is the renminbi and the outlook for Asian currencies more generally, because the renminbi continues to trend against the dollar. And this is in a very orderly downtrend by the dollar against the Chinese currency. That clearly reflects the relative health of the two governments' respective balance sheets. And the reality is that the Biden administration in the USA looks primed to pass another extremely generous stimulative package. And most of that money that goes to consumers will probably be saved. In other words, it will have absolutely no economic benefit. And then the government will be on the hook for paying it back. It virtually ensures that taxes are going to rise. And taxes will rise in a number of states anyway because of the massive holds that have been put in state finances. That all points to a medium-term challenge in terms of getting growth back up. But of course, there is then the potential that we're going to see a significant economic revival in the short term as vaccines are rolled out. But of course, we also had news in here today that South Africa has knocked back at the AstraZeneca vaccine because it is ineffective or not effective enough against the South African variant. the UK variant is spreading internationally and is trending higher in a number of areas, whereas the original virus strain is trending lower in new cases. Well, what that suggests is that we can hope that the rapid pace of vaccinations in places like the UK and the USA will be effective in curtailing the spread of the variants, but it won't be as effective. So there is the scope, at least, that we are going to have an additional booster shot. There is the very real prospect that now that these viruses are out in the wild and will continue to mutate, that we're going to be looking at additional shots at least once a year going forward. That's been one of the possibilities that was outlined from the outset, and it does look now to be really quite realizable. As we then think about the wider outlook, well, in Asia, the Taiwanese market has also broken out, but it is pausing now over the last few days. The Vietnamese index, having pulled back really quite sharply from its peaks, then rebounded. It was in negative territory today, so we're not quite out of the woods yet in terms of this pause and consolidation in the region of the all-time peak around the 1200 level. And then the Indian market, which has been doing especially well since the big budget giveaway that was announced last week, continues to push on to new high ground, and it has really broken out in a very impressive manner. Of course, if we are going to see additional commodity demand, then that is positive for commodity producers, and the Australian stock market continues to push up and out of this short-term range. We're still right in the region of the peaks from back in 2007, and it looks increasingly likely that it will push on additionally through that 7,000 level before too long. Then as we think about the resources index, well, it has been going sideways for most of the last decade, and now that 5,000 area, having offered resistance in the past, now appears to be offering support. So we can conclude that the resources sector overall will continue to provide a tailwind to the outlook. And then, of course, the currency. It looks like we are going to see additional upside from the Australian dollar. So this is quite clear that we're seeing appreciating currencies in Asia and in commodity producers, particularly developed commodity producers, and appreciating currencies in the same places. This is the polar opposite of what we saw for most of the last decade. For all of the period from the peak in the commodity complex in about 2011, the only advances we saw in many of these commodity markets and in Asian markets was due to the devaluation of their currencies. And that has now definitely changed. So we're seeing that investors are flowing back towards the emerging markets and flowing back towards Asia generally, where there are a lot more developed markets these days than there were in the past. The fact that South Korea is still considered an emerging market and has substantially higher yields than developed markets is an idiosyncrasy that's likely to be ironed out as money moves back towards the Asian region. And the Brazilian real has also steadied. Now, it accelerated lower and pretty much halved in value between the beginning of the year and the nadir of the pandemic. But it has steadied, and if commodity exports pick up, then that is likely to be beneficial for the Brazilian market overall. When we think about that in just currency-adjusted terms, in this case versus the pound, well, then it gives us a very different picture. But we have clearly got a sequence of higher reaction lows since the beginning of this year. It is worth pointing out that Brazil was among the great beneficiaries of the migration of production of agricultural commodities in particular in the early parts of the 2000s, and the index was among the best performers in the world. So as we look at the outlook for commodities more generally, and then certainly the agricultural sector. Well, soybeans has completed a lengthy base formation and is a bit overbought in the short term, but certainly not that overbought. And when we think about where the potential is, well, we've had massive crop disruptions over the course of the last year. It is easier to change the supply dynamics of agriculturals than it is for industrial resources. All you need to do is plant more, fertilize more, and we'll have more crops eventually. Obviously, the risks from inclement weather notwithstanding. Whereas if you want to bring a new world-class copper mine online, it takes decades. And we haven't had a great deal of investment in new supply in really at least the last decade. So copper prices continue to march higher. I do think that if we're looking at the potential for a new commodity-led bull market, then we need to just pay attention to different commodities than we did in the early 2000s. Back then, it was all about iron ore and China's accession to the global economy through the WTO. On this occasion, it is very clearly about the energy transition. The fact that lithium is moving higher in line with the copper price, and that nickel prices remain firm, also helps to suggest that that is indeed the case. Platinum is continuing to steady, and it pushed on to new recovery highs in here today. I do believe that people are playing the ratio between platinum and palladium. It suggests that demand for palladium is likely to abate because of increasing supply of electric vehicles. At the same time, increasing mining of nickel is likely to provide more palladium as a byproduct. So the supply inelasticity meets rising demand has in fact completely reversed, and is likely to reverse in a sharp manner over the course of the next while. So that region of the trend mean is a rather large psychological barrier, and if it were to break below 2200, then I think that there is clear potential that we're going to see a significant reversal of this ratio, because platinum is clearly outperforming. Now, when we think about the wider commodity complex, there is the push factor of higher oil prices, and crude oil remains really quite firm, and it pushed through the $60 level in here today, so a very clear breakout from this short-term range. And pushing back above $60 brings it back into economic production levels for much of, or many of, the shale properties. Of course, they do have the additional headwind from an inclement political environment at present. So that may put additional upward pressure on oil prices, or it may result in a higher cost of production, which, and of course, they need to be able to hedge that. So it's out in the futures curve is where we need to keep an eye on where prices, or when prices, start to push through the $60 area. Then gold prices continue to pause in the region of the trend mean. The one thing that is missing from the commodity bull market is the underperformance of broader equities. Generally, as commodities rise and people worry about inflation, then we can clearly think about the NASDAQ 100 as the leader in this cycle. It was at additional new highs in here today. When we think about the best performers on the day, well, it's being led higher by some of the champions of the lockdowns, particularly Nvidia and, of course, Moderna. But then Illumina is a rather new entry into that period, into that particular gambit. And then when we think about where are we, well, it's a little overbought in the short term. And there's an abiding feeling overall that people have missed out on the move. And as GameStop comes back down, I think it's worth reminding ourselves that on a log scale basis, it is still 10 times higher than it was back in September. And that is even after it has fallen nearly 90% from the peak put in last week. So it's still expensive compared to where it was a year ago, and the outlook for the company still looks like they're going to go bust or will have to contract significantly. But that doesn't mean that we haven't still seen very impressive moves. The other one that was a clear boom and then subsequently gave up a lot of the advance was QuantumScape. There's still a lot of enthusiasm for the potential of solid-state batteries, but we are still years away from mass production. When we think about just the enthusiasm of retail investors, that's a late-stage development. Of course, it's only a straw in the wind. It's not until we see that interest rates start to push back up, and as yields continue to rise, that is an increasing potential. Now, 1.2% is a big psychological level on the 10-year, and it didn't quite push through it in here today. As the yield curve spread continues to expand, and it is now up to 105 basis points. Well, it's positive for the banking sector. They get to make a somewhat wider margin by lending, borrowing short and lending long. As this continues to do well, we can anticipate that the banking sector will continue to perform reasonably well. But the other point is that as the yield curve increases, it increases the cost of servicing the debt. And that's true for any issuer, but of course, since the biggest issuer is the government, then it's going to necessitate that we have additional stimulative measures and additional measures to try and hold down that 10-year yield. What it suggests is we're going to be in a negative real interest rate environment for the foreseeable future. And then when we think about, well, where are inflationary pressures? Well, one thing that is particularly relevant to inflation is rent. It's by far the biggest component of how the Federal Reserve computes the inflation rate, and it has trended higher pretty impressively over the course of the last while. As we look at what the risks are for a landlord, well, if there's the potential that the debts that tenants have racked up over the course of the last year are going to be forgiven, well, that's a risk for landowners or for landlords. And then when we think about the forbearance and the potential that the tenant, whoever that might be, is going to run into trouble and subsequently not have to pay their debts, that's an additional challenge. So they're going to have to demand a greater return. That's exactly what we're seeing. And it's what the bond yields are starting to tell us. What it suggests is that we're getting increasingly close to the point where the Federal Reserve is going to have to intervene. But they're unlikely to do so until they're provided with a catalyst from the market. Now, the stock market continues to push higher, and therefore the Federal Reserve is not under duress. It's not until they're under duress that there is likely to be an additional increase in the quantity of stimulation. But we're definitely starting to see more people feeling like they're missing out. And that is generally an indication that we are coming close to a peak and that there are a substantial number of shares that are quite overextended. And when we think about the precious metal markets, they've gone through their corrective phase, and there's still a lot of doubt being expressed about them now. There is virtually no doubt being expressed about the stock market, and yet it's really very overextended. And I think there is the potential for some trading around those two values. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.